Okay, so for those who I haven't already introduced myself to yet, I'm Brian. And in addition to being a teaching fellow for the class here at Harvard, Chad and I also both work on the software development team for CS50, working on some of CS50's software tools. And we're going to give you kind of a taste of what those tools are right now, giving you kind of a high-level overview of what those tools are. And then afterwards, we'll break out into small groups again. And you'll get a chance to actually try some of these tools hands-on and get a feel for how they actually work and ask questions about them that may come up as you actually try using them. So the first tool that we expect that students will be using most often is CS50 IDE, the integrated development environment that lives in the cloud and essentially acts as a place online where students can write and edit their code and run their code. And because this is really like a fully fledged computer in the cloud, students can install whatever additional packages and software they would like to in CS50 IDE. And they can run code in any language, not just C and Python, but others as well, all using CS50 IDE. And because it's all online, it means that if students are using certain computers at school and a different computer at home, they can get access to the exact same files. No need to like transfer things via flash drive, or maybe they left a flash drive at home. It's all always synced to the cloud, which means that no matter where the student is, so long as they have a computer and connection to the internet, they can get access to their files. A couple lesser known features of CS50 IDE that are potentially worth mentioning that might be of value to you and your students. One is collaboration mode. Up in one of the menu bars, you can go and click on the share button in CS50 IDE. And that will open up a window that looks something like this. And what you can do from there is invite someone to view your workspace, either read or read and write. And that means that it serves a couple purposes. But one is if you want to do like a collaborative coding activity where students are working together on writing code, you can have the student add some other student to their workspace so they can work together. And the code gets highlighted based on who wrote it so that if you go back later, you can see, OK, student A wrote these lines of code, and student B wrote those lines of code. So you know that it's not just like one student writing everything. And another potential use case is if you want to see your students' work and check up on their progress, you can have your students share their CS50 workspace with you by adding your name to the invite people. And what that means is that you could then log into your students' workspaces, take a look at all the code that they're writing, for instance, in order to provide feedback or the like. So that's the collaboration mode. And definitely at any point during the presentation as we talk about these tools, if you have questions, just stop us and we'll be happy to talk about them. Other things that are useful within CS50 IDE, one is file revision history, which Doug alluded to a little bit before earlier. But if you go to the file menu in CS50 IDE and click on View File Revision History, a bar appears on top of every file that will show you a history of every time that file has been saved, which means that if you accidentally delete a file, or if you accidentally realize that you made a change that makes the code not work, or if you just want to go back and look at the progress from the code's creation up until its finish point, you can scroll along this bar and view any of the historical versions of that code and potentially revert an older version as well. So all saved versions of the code appear there too. It also acts as a somewhat useful heuristic for like plagiarism detection, because if in two successive saves, like the code goes from no code to like 100 lines of code and it's all done, that's usually a sign that someone just like pasted the answer right there. Certainly a very useful tool for many different reasons to be able to go back and look at the revision history of a file. And then finally, another one that we'll be using a lot, but that you might use too if you're ever presenting to your students, is presentation mode. If you go to the View menu in the IDE and click on presentation mode, everything just gets a little bit bigger. It gets a little bit easier to see. And so that's helpful if you're like broadcasting your screen on the projector or something for students to see. It'll be easier to read that way. So that's CS50 IDE. Questions about CS50 IDE before we move on to some of the tools that are installed in CS50 IDE? Yeah?
You say that you can go through the revision history of when you save. Is that like when you type make?
Not make. It's literally when you to go to like file save and you save the file. That gets saved as like a snapshot of the file in the revision history that you can then scroll through. Yep?
File revision history is supposed to show up when it's checked. When it says show file revision history.
Yeah, when you click on show file revision history, you should see the bar.
I'll
take a look at that after the session, and we'll think about that.
Brian, I have a question.
Yeah.
About the sharing. So you're sharing a workspace.
Yep.
So if I share my workspace with the students, can they see everything I have?
everything in your CS50 IDE, yeah, any of the files that are in your workspace folder, like along that left pane that shows all your files and folders, they can see all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually you'll want your students to share their workspaces with you. All right, so now onto some of the tools that are built into CS50 IDE, the first of which is Help50. And Help50 is designed to be a tool to help students understand what can be often cryptic error messages that are outputted by the C compiler, for instance, or in other parts of their system as well. And so, for example, say a student wrote this program in C, which contains an error. Anyone see what the error in this program is? It doesn't return an integer, but that won't be an error. There will be something that actually stops this program from compiling. Yeah?
You need the CS50 header function.
Exactly. I'm using the getInt function, which is part of the CS50 library, but I didn't include the CS50 header file. And so as a result, this program won't compile. And if a student were to try to compile this program, this is the message that they would see. And this type of message is often intimidating for students at first, because it's a lot of text, a lot of cryptic terminology that doesn't often make sense. Someone who's more familiar with C error messages might be able to parse out, oh, here's the getInt function, and it was implicitly declared, but might not know what implicit declaration means. What Help50 does is, instead of typing make program name, if you would instead, in your command line, type Help50 followed by the command, like Help50 make program name, Help50 will take the output, this error message, and based on regular expressions, we'll try and understand what is going on in this error message, and we'll try to present a more human-friendly version of that error message that might be a little more readable. And when you pass this error message into Help50, this is the response you get instead. You seem to have an error in test.c on line 5 by implicit declaration of getInt. Clang means it doesn't recognize getInt. Did you forget to include cs50.h, in which getInt is declared, atop your file? So it understands what the message is saying, and not only tries to interpret it for the student by presenting a more understandable version of it, but also tries to ask some rhetorical questions that might guide the student to figuring out what might need to change or be tweaked in order to make the file actually compile. Yep?
Does it catch every error?
It does not catch every error. It currently handles about 150 error messages, but whenever possible, we're trying to add more to that and to make it smarter. It's completely open source, meaning that if anyone wanted to, anyone around the world could try and contribute to Help50 as well, adding in new matchers for error messages and helping to make it even better. So we keep trying to improve it. But right now, it is built into CS50 IDE with those 150 plus error messages that it knows right now. If you're using it outside of CS50 IDE, you can also just paste error messages into help.cs50.net. If you go to help.cs50.net, you'll get a window that looks something like this, which just gives you an empty box where you can paste in an error message. And if you just paste an error message into there and press help50, you'll get output that looks like this. This was the original error message, and here was the more helpful version of that error message that tries to describe a way that you might be able to fix the issue. And we do track every time that someone runs Help50 and we don't catch it. And we keep like a list of all those so that we can go back and see, like, here's one that's coming up a lot that we haven't caught. Maybe we should add some more helpful output to help interpret that error message as well. It'll catch the first one. Because very often, if there are like three error messages, it's because there was an error in the first one. And if you fix the first thing, it'll fix the others. So it'll just match the first one it finds and display helpful output for that. But if you fix the first one and there are still errors, you can run Help50 again, and you'll get output for the new error messages that show up. Yep, and you'll get an opportunity to demo with that later, too. OK, so that's Help50. Next one is Check50, which Chad will talk about.
All right, so once the student gets their code to compile, they'll probably want to check whether it's correct or not. And so what we have done is we've created a tool called Check50, which will run the student's code against unit tests that we have created. So we give the student's program a specific input, and we make sure that we get a specific output at the end. What the student sees when they run the Check50, followed by a unique identifier that denotes the problem that they need to check and the file that they need to check, they will get an output that looks like this, where every check that they have passed is denoted by green text and a smiley face, and the text which they do not pass is denoted with a frowny face. Additionally, a fairly recent feature of Check50 is for particular problems, we notice that certain errors come up more often than not. For example, we try to give that sort of similar output to help 50, a sort of human readable error message, not just, you know, expected 22, got 18. Instead, if that's an error that we see often, we'll say, did you maybe forget to use the round function, for example, in greedy? Which you can see, I believe, on the previous slide, right here. So, actually, no, it doesn't. I apologize. Sorry for that. In any case, another one of the features of it is that it's extendable. So all the code for check 50 is on GitHub at github.com/cs50/check50. And we would appreciate it, and we encourage you, if there are checks that you think are necessary and you'd like to write yourself, you can submit them to us, and we will add them to check 50. That's it. Sorry.
All right, so that's check 50. Oftentimes, when students are working through code, their code doesn't work, and they're not sure why it doesn't work. And so one tool to help with that, help with the debugging process, is debug 50. And debug 50 is CS50's visual debugger. So oftentimes, debugging happens on the command line conventionally in C, and you have to memorize a lot of different commands for how to step through code one line at a time. In order to make that process easier for students and get them in the habit of learning to debug their code well, we've introduced debug 50, which is a visual debugger that lets you do a bunch of things, namely setting breakpoints, which are just lines in your code where the code will just pause. And so when you're running the code, when it hits like line 28, for instance, it'll stop the code running there. And you can see on that particular line what are the values of all of the variables at that point in time. And you can step through the code one line at a time so that instead of the whole program flashing by quickly, you can step through things slowly, understand what's happening at each step in your program, and oftentimes that's very helpful for figuring out where things are going wrong in a program. And so here's an example of that. This is what it looks like in the IDE. You'd click along the left-hand side to say, set a breakpoint here on line 19, and that will stop the program from running when it hits line 19. Everything will just pause when you run debug 50. And you can see in a panel along the right-hand side, here are all the variables that are defined at this point in time, and here are their values. And you can even change these. If you want to mess with the values and modify them and see what happens in your program, you can change the variables as you want. You also can step through your code one line at a time by pressing that button up there. And in the breakout sessions later, you'll have an opportunity to actually use debug 50 and see what it's like to step through the code one line at a time to try and figure out where a bug might be inside of some code. So that's debug 50.
All right, so before a student submits, the CS50 has a particular style guide. It is a way that we ask students to style their code. So style covers things like indentation, spacing between operators like plus and minus, where you put your brackets, those sorts of things. And while there are many ways to style your code correctly, there are infinitely more ways to style it poorly. And so we have settled on one specific style guide that we ask all students to conform to. And so we've created a tool called Style 50, which will automatically check a student's code for these style errors. This has been the tool which has most recently been sort of completely revamped. Essentially, how it works is there are several tools which style code for you. And so what we have done is we run the student's code against one of those programs and sort of diff the output. We figure out where the differences are between their code and what is a correctly styled program. And then we sort of count those differences and use that to determine a score. It is no longer true, actually. This PowerPoint says that it outputs a list of identified style issues. That is no longer true. Instead, it can simply output a visual representation of what has changed between the student's unstyled code and the new styled code. And then soon, coming up, we will build this into the IDE such that a student can just click a button, and this will show sort of a two-column interface, on the left side being their code, and on the right side being sort of a styled version of their code. And then eventually the score that the student gets from Style 50 will be automatically entered into the gradebook, which will be introduced later. And so this is an example of the CS50 style guide. One example, as you can see in that for loop up there, one aspect of the CS50 style guide is that the opening brace always goes on a line of its own, and the closing brace does as well. And this is to sort of, one, standardize the style such that we can do automated checking. But it's also when you go and work for and contribute to a project or work at a company, likely that company or project has a particular style guide that they ask you to conform to. And so this is really no different. We ask that students write code that looks this way. And it also makes it easier for us just to help students out when their code is styled correctly.
Next tool to briefly talk about is Submit50. Submit50 is CS50's tool for submitting assignments when students are turning them in. And so what Submit50 does is it effectively acts as a wrapper around Git. If you've ever used Git to push code to GitHub, for instance, we use GitHub to store all of a student's submissions. It works pretty well because it lets us add different collaborators so that a student and the teacher can see the code together. It also allows for commenting features, which you'll see later, and it allows for keeping track of different versions of code. But when a student runs Submit50, that's really just taking their code and pushing their code online to GitHub, where it'll be hosted at github.com/submit50/the student's username. And every time they run Submit50, that code gets pushed to GitHub, and all those different versions of that submitted file get stored on GitHub as well. And as you'll get an opportunity to try out tomorrow during the grading session, it makes it very easy to then see what a student submitted, to comment it on it, and students are immediately notified via email that they have a new comment on code that they have submitted, which allows them to pretty instantaneously receive feedback on the work that they're doing. And any of those submissions can then be viewed either on GitHub or on cs50.me, which I'll introduce in a moment, which, as Doug talked about, kind of wraps around GitHub and displays GitHub's interface in a more student-friendly way. And kind of the one thing that'll be a huge time saver for Submit50 is that as soon as a student runs Submit50 and turns in their assignment and pushes it to GitHub, that triggers a hook on our end where we will immediately run Check50 on that submission, checking it for correctness, taking the result of the correctness test, and importing it into the cs50.me gradebook for you. What that means is that there's never a need, really, to take a student's code, download every student's code, run some correctness checking on it, figure out the score, and then manually put that into a gradebook. That entire process is automated for you, such that as soon as a student submits the code is tested for correctness, and the result of those tests get added into a score gradebook automatically. And soon to come as well is going to be automated style checking as well, such that when the student submits code, we'll automatically check that code for correctness, and we'll automatically check that code for how well styled it is. Yeah?
And so those automatic grades would kind of populate two out of the four axes then, and you could go in and add the other one?
Yeah, we'll talk more about the grading axes tomorrow. They've changed slightly. We've really got three now, correctness, design, and style, but we'll take a look at those tomorrow in a little more detail. Yep? It does. Upon each resubmission, that will auto-trigger a new correctness test, and the results of that test will be inputted into the gradebook. Other questions about Submit50? And you'll get a chance to play with this as well, too. OK. Next tool to talk about a little bit is Droplet. Droplet is a new tool that, in fact, only just got released into the IDE yesterday, but it's very cool. And what it does is essentially, in the first week, of CS50, we introduce programming through Scratch, this kind of block-level language that lets students drag and drop code without having to worry about the nuances of syntax and where semicolons go and where curly braces go and closing all their parentheses and such. And it just makes it easier to introduce initially without having to be bogged down by that syntax. But very quickly, we move into C code, which can be a lot more intimidating to look at first because you have to worry about all of these stylistic things and syntactic things about where different characters need to go and what things need to look like. And even though the principles of loop here and variable get set here are really the same between the two languages, this is often a little more difficult to understand. Droplet is a tool to help people make that bridge from block-level programming to a text-based programming language like C. And what it'll do, if I can take a moment to demonstrate it, is if I have here an example of some C code. Down in the bottom right here, you see this button that says text. If I click on that button, watch what happens to the code. It turns into these blocks. And so these become draggable C blocks. This is C syntax, but it's drag and droppable. We have this kind of sidebar of blocks, similar to the way that Scratch has those blocks. And it just makes it all the more easy for students to be able to interact with C code by using these blocks, which helps to make that transition while still being able to use blocks in order to not worry as much about the specific syntax of C until they're ready for that. So we hope that'll be useful in helping students make that transition.
If there's a small error, let's say,
Correct. Mm-hmm. It won't translate if there are syntax errors. Other questions about any of the tools we've talked about so far?
So if we're not seeing that word text anymore?
In your terminal window, just run update 50 and press return, and then that will update the IDE. What? Yesterday, technically, yeah. But literally, just run it. And then in the upper right, you'll see a version number of the IDE. And so long as that version number is at least 101, you should be good. OK, so that was kind of the high-level summary of some of the IDE tools that exist. Other questions about that before we move on to some of the other tools?
I'm sorry, how did you start the
droplet? When you update to the latest version of the IDE, in the lower right-hand corner of the window, will be this word that's either text or blocks. And you can click on text and blocks to toggle the code in between text and block mode. OK. In that case, we'll take a look at that when we go into the breakout sessions. OK. Now we'll talk a little bit about cs50.me. So cs50.me, as has been alluded to a little bit already, is the centralized website for submissions and for grading in CS50. Students use their GitHub credentials in order to sign in. So students will need a GitHub account in order to use cs50.me. But it's integrated with the other CS50 tools, like Submit50 and Check50 and soon to be Style50, so that when a student submits their code using Submit50, their submission appears in cs50.me. It'll automatically run Check50 to check how correct that submission is. And eventually, it will also run Style50 to check the style of the code. So here's kind of a diagram of how all that works. Students working on their code in CS50 IDE, when they're done with it, they type Submit50. That takes their code and pushes it up to GitHub. And GitHub then talks to cs50.me in order to tell cs50.me, here's the new submission. And cs50.me also links back up to GitHub so that when you're on GitHub, you can click, OK, I want to comment on my student's code. And that will open up GitHub's comment page where you can comment on individual lines of code. So for students, what that means is that students, after they log into cs50.me with their GitHub credentials, they see a list of all of the problems that they've submitted. And they can also view comments and any scores that are in the gradebook using cs50.me. And tomorrow, you'll really have an opportunity to play with the interface and to see what GitHub's interface is like for commenting on code and such and what that looks like. But here are a couple diagrams. So this is what the submission page looks like. The list of problems is like a drop down there. You can select an individual problem and see all of the submissions for that problem on that page. And this is GitHub's interface for what it looks like for a specific line of code. So the student's code appears in this page. And next to every line of code is a plus sign. And if you just click on that plus sign next to any line of code, it'll open up a window where you can then type in a comment and then add that comment to the code. And as soon as you add that comment, the student is notified via email that they have a new comment on their code, and they can then go and look at what that comment is. So it makes it very easy to have a discussion and provide feedback about specific parts of a student's assignment. And another very helpful feature, which was mentioned in one of Doug's slides, is this saved replies thing. So if you find yourself making the same comment on students' code over and over and over, in GitHub settings, you can go to saved replies and add like a saved message that's a frequent comment that you make, such that you can very easily then, when you're commenting on code, just click on a saved reply to automatically populate that comment with the saved reply. So one I use pretty frequently is this no comments one, which offers a very lengthy description about why it's a good idea to be using comments. And whenever I see a student submission that doesn't have comments, I can just add this saved reply to there in order to say, hey, comments are valuable to help understand what's going on in your code. You should really think about including some more comments there. And so that just helps to speed up and facilitate the grading process. And so from the teacher perspective, you will group your students into sections, just groups of students that all have the same teacher. And you'll have a specific invitation link that you distribute to your students. When students click on that invitation link, they will join your section, which gives you the ability to view all of their submissions and to input scores for those submissions. And as a result, you can use GitHub's interface to view any of the code that your students have submitted and to comment on it that way. And so here's what that looks like. This is the teacher view. There's a list of all of the sections that a teacher is currently teaching. And there's an invitation link that can be distributed to students. And there are also buttons for viewing all of the submissions for a particular course and for inputting grades into the built-in gradebook that will allow you later to then like export things as a spreadsheet if you need to transfer grades into your school's own LMS, for instance, or do something of that. We'll support the ability to export those scores as well. And here's an example of how grading might work. There's a list of all of the problems that students have submitted and a list of all usernames that we've not shown them here. And you can click on any one of those to grade individual problems or grade individual students. And the gradebook, as we've talked a little bit about, will automatically check for the correctness of a student's assignment. And it will automatically input that correctness score. So really, all you need to worry about is, one, doing like qualitative feedback, writing comments on the student's code if you want to provide insight as to how they might be able to improve it, and also grading the design of the code if you would like. And those correctness scores can be overridden. So if check 50 doesn't catch one thing that you were able to catch when you were looking at a student submission, or if the student submission like hard codes the responses to all of check 50's tests, you have the ability to override those as well. And so that effectively is the gradebook. And again, you'll get more opportunity to play with that tomorrow. And here's what it looks like right now. Although CS50.me at the moment is currently undergoing some new revisions to make it even better for you guys in the fall, this is a quick taste of what the new version is looking like at the moment. But the new version will allow you to do things like create custom problems so that if you don't want to just have students submit CS50 specific problems, but want them to also be able to submit problems that you've created for yourself, the new version of CS50.me will allow for that as well. So that's CS50.me. You'll get more of a chance to play with that tomorrow. I'll turn things over back to Chad now to talk about Breakout.
Brian, so you said that last functionality is going to be available?
Before the fall, for sure. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly. So you would group things into like a course for all of the sections that you teach, and then each section might be like the period one class or the period two class, for instance. No.
As far as kids self-selecting into the more comfortable, less comfortable, they would just stay within their section but receive the appropriate grading based on the auto grading.
Yep, for any problem that they submit, we'll just grade that problem regardless of like students' comfort level. You don't have to, no, though. You can if you would like.
All right, so a couple years ago, CS50, or before we transitioned to the web IDE anyway, CS50 had a particular piece set called Breakout, in which students would make a sort of a graphical game, a brick breaker game, if you're familiar with those, where a ball bounces from bricks at the top, and you have a paddle at the bottom that keeps it from falling below it. But unfortunately, when you transition to a web IDE, graphical programming gets a little bit harder because you don't have the same graphical system that you do on your local computer that you do in a browser. So what I've been working on for, I guess, about the past 6 months or so is sort of getting this, trying to resurrect this PSET and sort of bring it back toward the web. This PSET still comes earlier in the curriculum, wherein students haven't really learned JavaScript or any of those web languages yet. This is still during the sort of the C portion. And so sort of give an idea of what the code kind of looks like. Oh, wow. So this is the C code too small? Start with that. So this is sort of what the C code looks like for Breakout. This is the staff solution for the PSET. And so real quickly, I'm just going to sort of prove to you that it works, and myself maybe too. So you can see we have a little brick breaker game here. We have a paddle. This is a lot harder to play it with the monitor over there. So sort of the idea is we want to get sort of that same sort of thing working in a web browser. And I should mention the library that we're using is called the Stanford Portable Library. It's a library which makes graphical programming easier for students. It provides a sort of an easy interface for creating those rectangles, for creating the paddle, those sorts of things. And so what we wanted to do is sort of alter it in a way that rather than outputting an executable that you can just run on your computer, it should output, you know, JavaScript, for example, something that runs on a web browser. So that is sort of what we did here. And so right now, what my computer is doing, you can sort of ignore the crazy output, but it is taking that C code, and rather than compiling it, which is taking C code and turning it into sort of machine code, code that the processor can understand, it's doing something called transpiling, where it's taking the C code and turning it into JavaScript. Transpiling means taking from one language and sort of turning it into another language, like translating. And so that's sort of what it's doing here. And in the IDE, if I can get this to sort of work, I already have the HTML loaded up, so I'm just going to go ahead and open it. Oh, man. And we can see we have the same game, but it's now displaying in a web browser. And I apologize that the resolution is so poor. But in any case, the same game. If it was hard playing it over there, it's harder when I can't see the ball. But in any case, we can see is that same C code is now running in the web browser. And that's something that we hope to bring back as an option for you guys sort of this fall. But thank you very much.
Hello, everybody. So I'm Sean. Recently got a new name tag, even though I lost my previous one. And so we're going to switch gears a little bit.
My mic.
Oh, I don't have a mic.
Stand at the podium.
This mic?
Use the one that's right. This is the big mic.
This one? Okay. I don't know. Okay. So until I get a mic. I'll decrease my height a little bit. So we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to start talking about reference 50. So Doug alluded to reference 50.
You can stand.
Oh, okay. Doug alluded to reference 50 a little bit ago. It's sort of, in essence, what we want to do is give students a kind of one-stop shop, as it were, for figuring out what different C library functions do. Now, Doug talked to us a little bit about what he talked about man pages. And so if you've never run into a man page before, say I was a CS50 student and I was doing, say, Caesar, for example, and I wanted to figure out, okay, I need to convert this string into lowercase, and the spec told me to use this function to lower. And so man, which is short for manual, is a sort of command line tool, which in Spirit is supposed to help students kind of or not students, but in general programmers, figure out what various C library functions do. So if we type man to lower on the CS50 IDE, we get this output. So it seems like, okay, to upper, to lower, convert letter or upper, or to lower, upper or lowercase, get some synopsis. So that looks like how we use it. Some little bit of a technical description of it, return value, conforming to, don't really know what that means. Bugs, oh no, I don't want my program to have bugs in it. Keep on scrolling down, we get some more dirty details. Colophon, I don't even know what that word means. And then at the end here, we see that this was written in 1993. So all things considered, the man page, although the idea is great in Spirit for something we want to offer to CS50 students, that being a reference for any functions that they may care about using, in practice, the man page we deem is like insufficient a resource for CS50 students, especially given that a lot of them, for example, other functions like isAlpha, will give you, actually, they've kind of gotten lazy with the man page and wrote up one man page for all these functions, which is a lot, and then they just kind of bundle them all together with all this cryptic code that will be very hard for a student who's just transitioned from scratch to figure out. So what we want to offer with reference 50 is a sort of easier introduction to technical reading, to reference about C library functions that will still allow students to kind of get comfortable with the ideas behind man pages and such, so that in the future, perhaps they'll be able to break away from these training wheels that we're giving them. So Reference 50 as it exists now is a website that you can access right now at reference.cs50.net. It's been built over a number of years and gone through a number of iterations, but the current iteration looks somewhat like this, and you can pull the page up on your own computer as well, but you'll see that, you know, it's really similar in style to kind of the man page layout. And so that's sticking with the goal that we had of providing a sort of encyclopedia of various C library functions. The problems that we saw with man pages and things like that, that being that they're a bit too technical, they're a bit too sort of arcane for beginning programmers to understand. That's one of the problems we're trying to address with Reference 50. That being said, you know, we still want to kind of give students the option to go into that more technical reading if they choose to. And so there's a more comfortable and a less comfortable mode as well. And I'll go ahead and demonstrate that on the current iteration of the site. So we can go to reference.cs50.net here. And you'll see we have this less comfortable button at the top, and you can click that, check it, and uncheck it. So for an example, like we were just looking at the two lower functions, so we can go here, and you can see it's quite simplified and much nicer formatted than the man page, although it's giving, in this case, you know, relatively similar information. But we can see here, like, the description is a lot more friendly, the return value, and the code that it gives is a lot more simplified. It kind of cuts away all the stuff that probably isn't necessary when you're just trying to, you know, it's like 11:59, the PSET is due in 1 minute, and you're just trying to, you know, figure out how the heck this function works. This is sort of a resource that will be, like, much more readable and accessible to these students. At the same time, you can uncheck this button, and then it will give you essentially literally the man page just formatted better, but the exact same content, such that if the students are more interested in sort of how these functions are working underneath the hood or the more technical details, that's still available to them too. That being said, throughout the development of Reference 50, we've noticed a few things that we feel like we could improve it upon with the current iteration. So it's under development right now to hopefully be done by the summer with expanded functionality. So the things that we're trying to focus on is not only having kind of basic usage examples of these functions, but also giving them sort of in-depth practice problems, so to speak. Much more simple than the problems they'll be solving in the course, such as Greedy or Caesar, but, you know, less trite than, you know, for example, just calling the function and printing out the result of it, such that they'll be able to get experience using the functions without necessarily delving into something as complex as a real problem set, as well as trimming down the information to make it, you know, as human readable as possible and extending that where we can. So again, this is just the Reference 50 pages. And so in order to do this, we've decided to borrow from another tool that exists, which is Study 50. And so this Study 50 tool was essentially also kind of you know, a work in progress in terms of providing students the sort of practice problems that we are kind of looking to integrate into Reference 50. So Study 50, instead of being separated by categories, is actually separated by, instead of separated by functions, sorry, it's separated by, like, categories in the course. So you can see here there's a section for ASCII, there's a section, for example, for all the sorting algorithms and things like that. But the cool thing about Study 50 is if you go to one of these subjects, so here's the one for linked lists. They have a short little slide section about it so that students can use that for reference, but there's also these problems down here where they can write for their challenge to write these various functions. And in this case, it's using the CS50 appliance, which is outdated. So with the idea of both, you know, writing a resource for practice problems, but also updating sort of the you know, older versions of the practice problems we have here, and kind of giving it to students all in a one experience, is something we're also hoping to do with Reference 50. So with that in mind, I'll show you a few snapshots of what we currently have in development, and for which by the end of the summer will hopefully be the future of Reference 50. It will be kind of a comprehensive guide for all brands of CS50, no matter where you're taking it, with the idea being that we're trying to provide these students, no matter, like, kind of which level they're coming from, whether less comfortable or more comfortable at the AP level or the university level, they can kind of come here as a reference tool and a study tool to be able to, you know, kind of make the process of transitioning from no programming experience at all into, you know, the wild world of C that much easier. So here's the old version of the string length or Sterlin reference page. In fact, because this resolution is rather small, I'll go ahead and pull it up here. So we'll scroll down to string.h here. There's also a search bar. And then we'll go to string length. And we'll go and check less comfortable. So it gives us the name of the function. How do we include it in our file? It gives us the description of what it does. Tells us what it returns. And then here's the example program. So we have a string which says Rob and Dave and forever. And then it printfs, string is percent %d characters long. And then it so prints out string this is 20 characters long. And so this is kind of what I was saying before where, OK, this is fair enough. That's how I use string length. But like, there's kind of a large disconnect we feel between you know, a sort of very reduced example such as this and then the sort of context in which students will often be using it actually in code. And so in reality, what we're trying to do is offer students kind of a more in-depth version. So a similar example we could see with, for example, the stir page, which in this case doesn't even have a less comfortable mode. And so you can see in this case, there's no example program at all. And so what we're trying to do, so here's the sort of updated version. I'll zoom out a little bit. Styling subject to change. But what you can see that although, you know, our section headers here are very similar, and at first glance, the content is relatively similar as well, you can see that it's a little bit more human readable. And indeed, notably, the example is a little bit more complex. Instead of just printing one string, we have two. And then, in this case, it's stir, so it's a slightly different example anyway. But most notably, we have this practice section here in which the student is sort of given a very small but manageable, or a non-trivial but manageable problem to sort of implement in code, some sample output such that they can kind of, you know what corner cases their program has to handle. And then they kind of, with a very short specification of what it's supposed to do. And there's also a link to the example solution, which we have pulled up here. And so with the idea being that students are able to not only access, you know, how to use the functions, but able to, you know, challenge themselves, especially this could be useful, you know, for example, studying for quizzes, studying for tests, about how would I actually write a function, you know, to do something non-trivial. In this case, this one, checking if, or replacing the first occurrence of a specified string inside another, that's much more complex than, say, you know, just printing out the length of a string. So moving back to the slides here. And so this is, again, the sort of idea behind having the practice problems in addition to the example problems as well. In addition to that, we have a few more future plans as well. So one thing we're working on as well is to get it integrated with the IDE. So similar to now, how if you run debug 50, you have a like nice sidebar interface that pops out with the graphical debugger. We're hoping to have a reference 50 section as well. So if I type like, so this debugger that pops out here, where I will ideally add a reference section here so that you can pop that out and just search reference 50 right in the IDE, and you won't even have to, you know, go to the web address at all. In addition to that, we're hoping to eventually have a separate website with just an entire, with a mass of practice problems sorted by category in various tags, whether it be by function or sort of like by topic, what the students are looking at, such that you can look at the problems not only through reference 50, but also if you just want to, you know, go through every problem that has to do with arrays or every problem that has to do with linked lists, then that's also accessible as well. So these are the future plans we have. We're also certainly open to feedback from you all as in terms of what you would like to see reference 50. We've heard previously that people would like it expanded, you know, for instance, to Python and things like that. And we'd certainly love to hear your feedback on that as well. And for now, I'm ready or eager to take any questions that you might have or comments as well, if you have any of those. And I apologize for being rather static due to this microphone, but. Great. Oh, sure.
Can we submit, I guess, for practice problems, maybe that are even simpler than the relatively simple one that you showed there?
Mm-hmm.
What I have in mind is, let's say I'm starting with expressions. I just want them to write expressions over and over and over. And I thought this is stupidly simple.
Right, right.
Functions, and yeah, right, like 10 functions, and I'll give a very simple specification, like convert each mile or whatever. Mm-hmm. So maybe, because I don't see, I've heard it alluded to throughout the day that there are lots and lots of practice problems. I can't seem to find them.
Sure. Yeah, so that's certainly one thing I believe Haley will be talking about on the AP teacher site. So on that website, there's a, like a resources page, which all teachers are, that's like shared between everybody who's doing APCS 50, where you can add problems like that. And that's definitely something we'd love to have when we get this like practice problem website as a standalone thing. Definitely that's something that we'd love to integrate there as well. It's a wonderful idea. Any other questions, comments? All right, so seeing none, hearing none, we'll move on to Davey, who will be discussing with you the next topic. Thank you.
So the next topic is CS50 Quiz Bank, which lives at quizbank.cs50.net, and this is further along the topic that Lizzie brought up about exercises for students and questions that you can ask, incorporating a practice coding question into your class or quizzing students on material. This has a lot of great resources. And so I am going to, broadly speaking, QuizBank is our bank of all of our questions that we've ever asked in a quiz at CS50, and they're formatted in a way that can be rendered nicely, which we'll see in a bit. So I am going to show you how to generate a quiz, which can be downloaded as a Word document for your own purposes of giving them out as a mid-class exercise or in a as an actual quiz. So I've just created a new quiz called Algorithms, which maybe is one of our first topics in CS50. And now on the left here, we have a, and zoom in on that a bit, we have a some different fields that we might or might not care about. Perhaps I want only the questions that are not released to public, such that my students wouldn't have had a chance to, get a leg up. I can choose subjects by just typing out the subject there and then clicking. And if I search QuizBank, sure enough, 9 questions come up about algorithms. And clicking on any one of them, I can get a quick overview of what the full question is. And this one happens to involve code. You can select in the left there what type of question you'd like. The answer can be shown there as well. So this can be a nice student-facing tool if you want to point them at this website to get them to practice, but the ones that are not released to the public are simply for your own use. So perhaps I want to add this to my quiz. That's as simple as going down to the bottom here and clicking on the quiz algorithms in this case that we'll add it to. Add a few more questions here. And now if I go back to Quiz Generator, click on Algorithms. Sure enough, I might have misclicked that. Sorry. Go back to Quiz Generator and we can view algorithms. And now I have a few questions here that I've added. If I want to remind myself what that question was to get a sense of the structure of the of how I want to organize the quiz, I can open up, read the question once again. I can then simply drag and drop the questions around, very simply. And then once I have the questions in the order that I want, I can simply download the quiz as Word document. And we'll see what that looks like. So now we have this quiz algorithms, and it has the questions here, and it's as simple as editing a Word document to get them, formatted how I might want to for my students. And of course I can copy paste or cut and paste to get it such that the quizzes can be reorganized here as well. Hopefully Word is a decent enough format for you. PDF is another download option. And that is pretty much all there is for QuizBank. And now I'll turn it over to Haley with ap.cs50.net. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go kind of fast because we want you to have an adequate amount of time to practice with the tools. Let me just get this queued up. Cool. But so ap.cs50.net is a website for your use, but also for your students. So it has, like, the homepage kind of just has general information about CS50, but then you also have your own site. So I'm signed in as Haley. It says, welcome, Haley. This would be like you as a teacher or me as a teacher. And then I can go to my site, choose a chapter and a module, and it has the resources for this chapter and module, as well as like the learning objectives, but I can also customize what is shown on this page. So if I go over to customize, I choose a chapter and a module, and I can toggle different resources on and off. So you guys had questions about like what resources do you have? There's a lot of different resources for APCS50. It's loading, but we'll get there. There's things like the lecture videos and a lot of the things that you've probably seen already by going through the edX version of a class, but there's also resources that are created specifically for AP. So just looking at this like drop-down menu, there's videos, written resources, slides, external resources, which is like things that we've found to be helpful that are not CS50, the learning objectives and CSTA mapping of if you're trying to figure out like how does this map to CS Principles AP. And then programming problems, there was like a specific question on that. So this has links to all of the programming problems, and there's like tons. So if we scroll down a little bit, you can see there's like a lot, like 5 pages worth. And then we have additional resources like written problems, teaching tips, demonstration ideas are, I think, really cool. And then the other one I really like is reference sheets, which we've also been working really hard on. Davey has been doing a ton for that. So like a lot of us just learned ASCII, and so we have a whole like one-page summary with graphics of ASCII, which is great to pass out to your students as like if you kind of like handouts or if you just like them to have a single-page reference sheet for a topic, this is like super useful. So this website is going to be changing a little bit, and it'll probably look more like a customizable version of this, the regular CS50 website. But we'll like keep you updated on that process. And for now, it'll still be like customizable with different resources, and you'll always have access to all of these cool resources. Any questions? Yes, Kelsey. Yeah, so it'll be on like your site. So you'll notice up here at the top, it says ap.cs50.net/Haley. So that's my website, so they can see like the things that I've toggled on. So if they go to a chapter or module, this is like the website that I've set up that I'm like, I want them to see these resources in particular. So that's what they'll see.
And we customize to turn them on and off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Lizzie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you just do that by changing your username. But again, so like the exact details of this is going to change a little bit. So I don't know if you like want to take notes on specifically this, but you will be able to change that. Yeah. Other questions? Cool.